The next one we would hear is testimony of the parties to the action. That would be you, sir.
Paul Gibbons, director of Red Mass Burns. He lives on the Cove, in the back of the Cove. Unlike what we're represented here, his 4x8 float hasn't been in the water for quite some time. Purposely leaves it on shore. He doesn't use it. The more important aspect about this is there are two sides to every story. And you, listening to Mr. Malloy's presentation, you would think, well, there is absolutely no reason why the planning board would deny this place. And how could they possibly deny it, given what you just heard? But what you just heard isn't right. It doesn't tell you the whole story. It doesn't begin to tell you the whole story. In fact, it leaves critical information. But one thing he said, represented to you, that there was no way that the planning board could look at the environmental issues and deny this permit. Section 16 of the ordinance says one of the requirements that they didn't get to is that the proposal will not have an adverse impact on spawning grounds, fish, aqualife, bird, or otherwise other wildlife habitat. That's in your ordinance. That pertains to the environment. That's a great misrepresentation of what the ordinance says. A ribald misrepresentation. The other issue is this. One big issue is this. I want to start off by saying that I don't believe that if you find fault with the planning board, and I don't think you will, but if you did, you'd have to send this back to the planning board. You cannot find facts for them. If they didn't find facts, you can't overrule those facts. And section 16B of the ordinance, one of the sections that I just read, has a list of 9 criteria that they didn't bother to look at because they found a criteria that they found wasn't met, so they didn't keep going. There are criteria that they didn't look at. And they have to look at it before they can grant a permit. They have to look at whether the proposal will maintain safe and helpful conditions, will not result in water pollution, will not have an adverse impact on fish, on spawning ground fish and aquatic life and wildlife habitat, will conserve shore cover, visual as well as actual points of access to inland coastal waters, will protect archaeological and historical resources, will not adversely affect existing commercial or maritime activities in the commercial fisheries area, which is by here, will avoid problems associated with floodplain as it conforms with other provisions of the land use ordinance, section 15. They didn't look at those things. Because when they got to section 15, they said, you don't need this, you're done. So, if you should somehow find the planning board made a mistake and to send it back, the planning board cannot issue a permit unless they find these conditions have been met. And you can't find those for them. You can't find facts for them. You didn't hear the testimony. You discussed that with your lawyer. But they have to review it again. More importantly, this case, this Lentine case versus the son of St. George. Here's what happened here. This fellow Lentine proposes a wharf to put his boat on, recreational boat on. And the planning board says, that's too big. You can't build that. That's way too big for what you want. So they appeal it to the Board of Appeals, and they appeal to the planning board, and they go to the law court. And the law court says, well, you know, part of what you said was, in denying this permit, you said you said you denied it because it was inconsistent with the character and use of the area under Section 15C. And they said, that's too broad. You can't do that. That has to be related to the size of the float. In other words, the size of the float has to be such that it's inconsistent with the area around it, not just that it's inconsistent with the area around it. So you made a mistake, planning board. You committed an error of law. They found that. And you know what the final decision was? They upheld the decision of the planning board. They said, the record did not compel a contrary result. We're not going to flip your decision. Your decision, because the record showed that you didn't make a mistake, that it was compelling that the other side was entitled to a permit, we're going to uphold your permit. And the same thing applies here today. I will show you how the record on appeal supports doesn't require a contrary decision. It does not require a contrary decision. And therefore, they can't meet their burden of proof. And one of the purposes of zoning is to prevent incompatible uses from being next to each other, so one destroys the other. And the planning board, looking at this proposal by the Molloys, believed, once you look at the record, that there was that what they were proposing was incompatible with the area. And they also weighed that against the Molloys' need for this plant, well, for this system that they proposed. This $14,000 ramp and float system. They compared that need against what the environment was like. And they said, you know, it doesn't work out. It does not work out. What they showed was, in the testimony, was that Watts Cove is a very pristine place. It's an environmental sensitive area. There's wildlife and habitat area. There are no floats there, despite what he's saying. There are no floats appears there in the water being used, none. And it is a very pristine area because there's nothing built in the water there. And there's a reason for that, obviously. It's because it's almost all the time mudflats. And the testimony you just heard, or the argument you just heard, that it's available, that you can use, that he can use his floats 5 to 6 hours a day, is contrary to what our expert says. See, we too had an expert in both hearings. They didn't have an expert in the first hearing. We had a fellow named Paul Lieber, who was an environmentalist, and he testified, without contradiction in the first hearing, that the proposed float and rope ramp system would interfere with the wading bird habitat. It would be a threat to them. And he was concerned about the noise, and he told the board that if there's too much noise, those birds would leave forever. And that part of it, about the noise and the boys and the birds leaving forever, was not contradicted by anybody. And that same testimony was true in the second hearing. He also pointed out, when there was in the second hearing, the lawyers had an expert who said, well, they didn't think it was going to be a problem. And he pointed out that when it comes to floats and ramps and noise, you really can't control how much noise is going to be there. You may have a prediction, if it's used a certain way, there may not be any noise, but if it's used differently, it could cause a great deal of noise, and noise is relative. On days when there is no wind, you know, noise travels a lot. And the question is, what effect will that have on these birds? He said, it will be a real threat to them moving away forever. So the planning board gives this testimony and says, well, this has been designated as a wildlife habitat by the state of Maine. And we know, you see the birds here, we see all kinds of different birds. And there's all kinds of different birds, by the way. And so if you saw a sandpiper come close to your dock, that doesn't mean a heron's going to be that close to your dock when people are there. It doesn't mean the other species of birds are going to be that close to your dock when you're there. So the problem was, we have expert testimony that said that it was a problem. It was a problem. And so if you say, well, let's look at the need for this. And the question was really was, When you have to take a canoe or a kayak or a rubber boat and put it in the water in this cove, do you need a ramp and float system? Especially one like this, that this big. Do you need something that big? And the record shows that you don't. There was no proof that you couldn't use something smaller. Nothing. This is what we want. So, given that you have such small boats involved, the harbor at high tide is only 5 feet deep. Most of the time it's mudflats. The ability to use it is very limited. Very limited. And the need is very small. And then you have the risk. So, the silent risk. That this, what someone thinks is okay, isn't okay. That the birds go away forever because of noise, or because they're so afraid, or because of the structure itself. Mr. Malloy even has a record that will show a mooring in the middle of the river for a kayak. I never heard of a mooring for a kayak before. And I know this from being a person with kayaks. I don't know how you could ever get into a boat that's a kayak moored to something without falling over. That'd be quite a trick. That's quite a trick. So the point is that there is no need for this. And when you raise that need against the environmental threat, the planning board made the right decision and the record shows the right decision. If you look at the actual words of the planning board in their decision, while they do not mention the length of the float, they say, quote, "The facility is not consistent with the surrounding character and uses of the area." That's what the ordinance says. They go on to say, "Because of the unique character of Watts Cove beyond the dam, existing conservation easements, resource protection in the cove, the tides," meaning the severe tides that are there, "wildlife and wading bird habitat designation, and the absence of existing floats in the water," they said, what he proposes and what's there are incompatible with each other. They're incompatible with each other. You heard him have testimony that, well, over in this area of the town, there's wild bird, wading bird habitats, and they allowed folks down there, and therefore I could have mine. But they didn't have the testimony of a wildlife habitat, of an expert saying, in this instance, in this cove, with this width, with this tide, it's going to be a problem. No testimony didn't occur in those other areas. The planning board, you see, had someone telling them something that they paid attention to. There is a problem. So, it's a problem that's real. And I have what I call, there's such a thing as the goose gander rule. What's good for the goose, you know, is good for the gander. One of their arguments is that everyone else can have one of these other codes, so we should be able to have it too. Follow that logic forward, and you can have all kinds of these things in that one Watts Cove and destroy the wildlife habitat. It's okay. The ordinance says it's okay. It's okay, is their argument. Well, the ordinance has protections. Unlike what he says, the ordinance does have protections for that kind of activity and its effect that it would have. You weigh the risk of a total loss of a wildlife habitat against someone's need to be able to have a canoe and a rubber boat on a ramp and boat system that costs $14,000 when no one else around you has one. You say, well, that risk-reward ratio doesn't work. And that's exactly what the planning board did. So you see, there is reason why the decision should stand. And I would point out to you, on the first appeal, they didn't have anyone to rebut our expert testimony at all. On the second appeal, the fellow said, oh, we think it's going to be all right. But he had to admit that he had no control over how much noise is going to emanate from that dock and pier, the ramp and boat system. He had no control over that. And so it could be a problem, but take the risk. The beauty of, I have a friend of mine who is a lawyer that writes in the New Yorker magazine. He said something once, he comes to Maine, he said something once that I thought was quite remarkable. He said, people invest in attractive places until they're no longer attractive. And that's kind of like what happens when people don't have zoning. They don't pay attention to things. It's beautiful now and then harmful. That's how it's beautiful. There's no floats. The birds live there. There's mud flats for them to feed on. and you can do something to take that away. You can make it all go away. You can take the risk. And no matter what Mr. Casafica says to you, he never took away that risk. He didn't say anything to take away that risk. If these were other circumstances, it would be different. So I call upon you to call upon your common sense. If you look at things, like even in lakes, you don't allow permanent docks in lakes. You just have a small dock, it's limited how big you can have it, normally. But you're allowed to have it because you can use it 24 hours a day because there's water there. In this instance here, there's very little water. It completely drains at low tide. And the high tide changes every single day. So your usage is very limited. Archive says it's about 2 hours. That's the most you can use it. And if you have to pick different times of the day, this high tide, you have to pick the time. And then you have to be back within an hour because you might be stuck in the middle of the mud. How much of a need do you have for a floating dock, for a canoe, and a rubber boat? Again, compare that to the risk. The burden of proof is on the applicant to show you that the record compels you to find that they are entitled to this floating lock system. It compels it. When you think about how pristine Watts Cove is, how the mudflats provide a habitat for these wild birds, when you think about that, you can just say, oh, there's no way they met their burden to show that the record shows that they're absolutely entitled to this. If it weren't for the wildlife habitat there, if it weren't for other things, if it weren't for the fact that there was a resource protection area there, or a conservation easement in this cove, and that there's nothing, there are no ramps or floats in this cove that nobody's using, maybe the circumstances would be different. But they aren't different. But they are different. And those differences make a difference. So, the record does not compel you to say, oh, I looked at these facts, and absolutely, the Malloys are entitled to put what they want right there. It will not cause a problem whatsoever. It will not violate our ordinance. You cannot say that. And just like the Supreme Court said in the Lentil case, we looked at the record. Even though you made a mistake of law, we looked at the record. And your burden was to prove that the record compelled a contrary result. And they said, you know what, the planning board, and I'll say it to St. George, did the right thing. The record supported their decision. And the record before you supports this decision. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could be heard in rebuttal very briefly.
No, what? If you don't mind, the first chance is for the board to ask any questions of this gentleman, if they'd like. Any questions by anybody on the board at this time? Mr. Hodges, no comment or question? Okay, yep, this time we would take rebuttal.
Thank you. Try to be brief. I think we've tried to tell the whole story and tried to tell it truthfully. I don't think I've ever been accused of making a ribald representation. Now, not even a bald or bald-faced representation. But at any rate, you know, the planning board picked the criterion that it did to deny this twice. And what I'm trying to say here is they cited environmental concerns with regard to this standard. There are other standards, but you know, they didn't fail to acknowledge the Section 16D standards. You take a look at item 13 in the record. We address each and every one of them as part of the application and explain why we met them. And the hearing, if you look at the minutes, we went through every one of those criteria, and people talked about all of those criteria, but they didn't deny it because of 16D4. They denied it because of 15C5. And apparently, you know, what appears to us as we look at this is Yes, the planning board did engage in balancing of the need against the environmental threat. There's nothing in the ordinance that talks about need, just that it be no longer than what you need. But not that you have to show a need. Molloy simply want to be able to put a float out for their boats. That's it. So, and it's, to be sure, it's seasonal. They are proposing a seasonal float, not permanent. With regard to the time that the tide is in, Mr. Molloy's been consistent. It's a minimum 5.5, sometimes 6, a little more hours per tide, but there is water. There is water that would allow the float to be used. He lives there. As far as, you know, need is not a criterion, as far as the Lentine case, yes, it went back and the law court said, even reading this the right way now so we can support this, we go back and we support the planning board. That was because there was evidence that would show that there was danger of an ice pileup that would have occurred if this had been permitted. Then it would threaten neighbors' property and businesses. Such a threat here. The harbor master's already said there's no navigational threat. This is a seasonal matter. So this is different. And as far as the leaper testimony that birds would leave forever, I think that was refuted by Mr. Emerson from Stantec for us. And if a float in the water would cause birds to leave forever, Mr. Stearns had one out there, and Belanchek's had one. Mr. Belanchek had one out there before. Birds are still there. You see photographs in that. So the ordinance doesn't look at need. The ordinance looks at these standards. The planning board applied a standard. We believe it did it incorrectly, and they did engage in a balancing. But the balancing is not what's called for under the ordinance. It's not called for in that section, and it's beyond what the ordinance allows. Thank you.
Very good. Any questions of the board of either of the people?